He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better.
Geraldo.
77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Good morning, New York. Wednesday, the 14th day of October. Later in the program, I want to talk about how the Holy Land is about to go to hell in a handbasket. We'll talk also about the former NBA reality star Lamar Odom. An overdose, near death, in a coma. We'll talk about that. Explore what the Democrats were really saying last night about federal legalization of marijuana. But Noam, you got to tell me honestly, would you watch the debate or the Mets game?
The Mets game.
Did you even check out the debate at all?
I did. I flicked back and forth, and then I kind of knew when I came in early this morning I could sort of breeze through the debate, and, you know, the Mets was more pressing, of course.
So. More pressing. So, final game tomorrow, eh?
It is. Game 7, Los Angeles, 8:07 start time, and the Mets sound like they think
game
they're going
to win. Right? Game 5.
Yeah, Game 5. This is it.
This is it. The Cubs, you know, I did my talk show in Chicago with a Chicago-based company for 14 years, so I kind of have an affection for the Cubs. So it would be interesting if it's the Cubs versus the Mets, but obviously the Mets have to get past the Dodgers first. All right, you watched it. I know more or less you watched it, and I want to tell you how I feel about what happened last night. I think, first of all, you have to say goodbye to the 60s, because Bernie Sanders reminds me of me 50 years ago. Me, when I didn't trust anybody over 30, my friends and I were going to bring the man to heel. The world, unfair, war, sucks, government owned by Wall Street, income needs to be redistributed, social change urgently necessary, forced integration desperately needed to save the cities, to save the planet from itself. We have to deal with pollution, is what we called it then, climate change now, all those issues really are just as legit today as they were in the 1960s. Don't get me wrong. The difference is we have changed. Now you watch the utter dysfunction, the woeful partisan division of government at every level. And it has deflated our sense of ourselves as titans of social change. It's made clear that steering the system, the man, is a painfully incremental process. Wall Street still reaping disproportionate profit. Frustrating, but that's the way it is. The racial, the social divide as big or bigger than ever it was in the 1960s. We can barely get along well enough to confront foreign enemies or agree on accepting refugees, immigrants, even keeping the lights on, the garbage picked up. They say that if you're a conservative as a young person, you have no heart. But if you're a liberal as an older person, you have no head. Now, these days, listening to this program, I know we're the outlier when it comes to talk radio, because I don't consider myself either a conservative or a liberal. But I am a pragmatic idealist. I still cherish that notion from the 1960s of the need for a fairer world. But now I understand how enormously complicated the real world is. I don't think Bernie Sanders got the memo. I mean, don't get me wrong. You saw him last night, even if you just dipped in. He's a charming, sincere, impassioned senior who is an utterly impractical man who has zero chance of getting elected. Zero. And even if that miracle happened, he has zero chance of getting Congress to go along with his socialist agenda. Let's face it. It's not the 60s anymore. Last night, Hillary Clinton became the Democratic nominee. In fact, if not in name formally. I mean, hers was the voice of the all-time liberal who grew up to become the pragmatically progressive First Lady, Senator, Secretary of State. Love her or hate her, she knows what real-world government can or cannot do. Now, remember this, and I know some of you hate it when I say this, but the Benghazi hoax will be gone by next November. The ruthless promoters of the Benghazi hoax will be revealed as the political hatchet men they are, to the extent that hasn't been done already. The email scandalette will be all played out by next November, and the finding will be no harm, no foul. She's not a perfect candidate. She could be beaten by an assertive, competent, open-minded, inclusively moderate Republican. But ladies and gentlemen, isn't it unlikely that the GOP will nominate that kind of candidate? Immigration and abortion will continue to distort the GOP platform, as it has in previous election cycles. And for those who consider those issues defining, there will be no trouble picking a side. So who's the candidate going to be? What about Joe Biden, you ask? Vice President Joe Biden. He missed the train. He missed that train he used to take every Friday home to Delaware. He had a brief window of opportunity. We all felt terrible for him. He's so eloquent in remembering the suffering of his family and the roots of, you know, his dad and granddad and so forth. But that narrow window of opportunity has passed Joe Biden by. Isn't it irritating that he continues to string this thing out? He's over. Joe Biden is over. The candidates will be Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. That's it. Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. That's who it's going to be. The nation will choose between these two 69-year-olds, baby boomers, who went off in different directions. Trump is flamboyant and edgy and filled with the swagger of 1950s-style American exceptionalism. He's bigger than life. Hillary Clinton's not. She's not particularly charming. She's all banged up politically. But she's indisputably competent. And she's able to compromise. The election between Trump and Clinton will be closer than anyone expects. I expect that a lot of people will say that they're voting for Hillary Clinton when they're really voting for Donald Trump, but are too embarrassed to say so. And I think race will play a huge part in next November's election. But it will be Clinton versus Trump. Clinton is without serious competition. Trump has Dr. Ben Carson. But Dr. Ben Carson is a lot like Bernie Sanders, isn't he? He's a feisty idealist. In Carson's case, he's a brilliant creationist. And he's on the opposite side of the political and social spectrum from Bernie Sanders. But both of them will continue to rage about injustice. Both will be beloved. But neither will be president of anything bigger than a university or a library. Bernie Sanders, we love him. Ben Carson, too. These guys don't know how to govern. They don't. It will be Trump versus Clinton. And if it's not Trump, it'll be one of those mainstream Republicans from the system. Maybe Bush, but I think Bush is a huge long shot. I think it's going to be Trump. Trump versus Clinton. What do you think? All right. I like you calling. 866-ARALDO is the number. Let me start in Long Island with Daniel. Okay, Daniel, what about my assessment? What are you thinking?
I think he's going to beat them. He destroyed the Republicans, and Mrs. Clinton is going to destroy him. That's how it's playing out so far.
I'm not sure what you're saying. Who are you saying is going to be in, and who's going to be out?
It's going to be Trump, and it's going to be Mrs. Clinton, and Mrs. Clinton's going to whip his butt.
And why do you think people will choose her over him?
Because of the foreign, getting rid of the Mexicans, Hispanic people are not going to vote for him because I'm Spanish.
All right, I got you. I hear you. I think immigration is going to be huge, and people will be picking sides depending on that. Here's Robert in Brooklyn. What do you think? What did you think of last night, and what are you thinking about now?
Well, I think everybody on that stage pretty much had the same basic
position. I agree with that.
So it wasn't nothing controversial about it.
Was it boring as a result?
I didn't find it boring. I found, just like I said, it's everybody had an issue. But my issue is that if we have Donald Trump is a pitch man, and I think that I listened to him get questions asked to him. He never answers a question. He'll go, You ask him a question, he'll ramble on and repeat himself over and over again and then give you a half answer. You know, and Hillary, I think she's been beat up too much. She's been beat up, and I don't know if the public is really going to say, well, let's put her in the White House. Because, you know, when you get the news media.
Well, hold it, Robert. If you're saying Trump is not answering any questions and Hillary's too beat up to get elected, who's your president?
I tell you, I like Sanders. Sanders been in president. He's been in the Senate for 30 years.
So I think you're smoking too much of that Vermont dope.
It's not like he doesn't know what the government is about.
I think that he knows what government is about, but he has such an unrealistic idea of how you translate idealism into practical politics.
Well,
I think that the world that he sees.
One more thing.
Go ahead.
Last night I heard on the news that we're shipping chickens over to China to be processed, and then they ship the chickens back to the United States. So this is what Sanders is saying, hey, why are we doing that?
Well, you know who's doing the poultry processing in this country? It's the undocumented immigrants that Donald Trump wants to round up and throw out. So you got a choice. Do we ship the chickens to China to be processed, or do we let the 11 million who are here doing that and other similar dirty jobs do it? But that will be a big issue. All right, when we come back, here's what we're going to do. I'll play you some of the highlights from last night. I'll get your take on what is going on. I also want to get the inside story. We have the head of the Bunny Ranch, you know, the brothel, the famed brothel out in Nevada where the ex-NBA star Lamar Odom went on a sex and drug orgy. You know him from the Kardashians. I know it's relevant in the global picture, but we care about the guy, and let's see what happens from the Bunny Ranch's owner from his own mouth what went down. All right, 866-Geraldo, 866-437-2536. I appreciate the calls. I see the board's full. I like that. Okay, welcome back. 25 minutes after 10 o'clock on this Wednesday, October the 14th. Man, time is flying. We're deep into fall already. Days are getting so short. Riding my bike home at night, I got to be careful not to get run over by one of these crazy Uber drivers or a cab. So, Noam, to the extent that you watched the debate last night, what conclusion did you come to?
You know, I thought Hillary did very well. She had to sort of reestablish herself in the race after what was a torturous summer and into the fall. And I think she probably did that. And I think, to me, my takeaway is I think she may have done well enough that Joe Biden might not jump into the race now.
He's over. Come on, he's got to please give me a break. At what point do you say to someone, you know, it ain't going to happen. Stop teasing everybody. The only reason you are doing it, are you truly agonizing over this decision or are you enjoying the spotlight?
Oh, I think he's enjoying the spotlight, but every candidate enjoys the spotlight. But I think he was really watching this debate to see what happened. If she had come out somehow bloodied, and I don't know how that would have happened because everybody else on stage I thought was kind of lame. But if that had happened, maybe he would have rethought that and, you know, said, hey, maybe it's time to jump
in. It was a stupid debate. Why'd you have those other three knuckleheads on board?
I mean,
really. I mean, with all due respect to Jim Webb, who was Secretary of the Navy and, more importantly, was a wounded hero in the Vietnam War. I mean, you love the man personally, but nobody has any idea who he is, Jim Webb. I mean, it's why he thinks he should be president is beyond me. I don't mind his politics. I think that he is a centrist Democrat in the traditional sense, not at all a radical person. I think he has moderated ideas, which I like, but nobody knows him. Nobody cares about him, with all due respect again. Lincoln Chafee from Rhode Island. O'Malley from Maryland. I mean, he was mayor of Baltimore.
Yeah.
He was mayor of the worst city in America. I mean, I love the people of Baltimore, and I've seen them up close and personally. But when you have, at one point, 100,000 people arrested out of a population of 600,000, and you have, you know, the murder rate 16 times higher than New York, and he was the mayor of that town, the governor of Maryland, and now he wants to be president, and he wonders why he's getting asterisks. I think that what happened last night is, without a doubt, you can't equivocate about it. What happened last night was that Joe Biden is going to be blown out. He's going to be blown out of contention. Shut up, Joe Biden. You know, plan your library or your professorship at the University of Delaware, whatever it's going to do in your life. God bless you. We thank you for your service. You've been a wonderful person and family man and all the rest. But, you know, stop, you know, flirting with, you know, going one more time. It's like a 40-year-old athlete who says, oh, next year I'm getting back into the major leagues, whatever your sport is. It just ain't happening for Joe. He's a 40-year-old professional athlete. So he should just go away and, you know, let us remember him fondly. He's got another year. Make the best of it. But stop cocking up the presidential race. I think it's Hillary, and I'm still thinking Donald Trump. I see a poll that shows Dr. Ben Carson just 1 point behind Donald Trump. I still don't know what that's about. I still don't know. Is that the creationist vote? Is that the Garden of Eden vote? Is that the anti-Muslim vote that's going Dr. Ben Carson's way? Is it the Tom Bradley, David Dinkins, Doug Wilder, you know, I'm going to vote for him, but I'm really not when the push comes to shove vote? I mean, I don't know what it is that's propelling Dr. Carson. Maybe if you ladies and gentlemen have an idea, you can give me a call at 866-HERALDO. I'll come to the calls I'll take one right now. Let me take one, but don't play that music. Let me play. I'll take Phil in Queens. Hey, Phil, what's up? Phil, you there?
I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yeah. So tell me, what's up?
So first you started, I called initially about Hillary. I think, quite frankly, you're wrong. Listen, you're one of the top newsmen in the last 30, 40 years, but Hillary is going to go to jail. Hillary
But for what charge? Like what charge?
She violated the law. Dave Petraeus took a plea for sharing a few emails with his security
I could go chapter and verse. How did you react? How did you react, Phil, when you heard Kevin McCarthy?
Phil,
how did you react when you heard Kevin McCarthy, the majority leader of the Congress of the United States, the leading candidate to be the next Speaker of the House? How did you feel when he said this was about taking down Hillary's numbers, the Benghazi hearing?
Heard his comments in real time. I was watching Hannity that night, and I said, this guy just put his foot in his mouth, but that isn't what he meant to say. The investigation.
You mean he didn't mean to be honest?
The wrongdoing, honestly. I said this guy.
It's not happening. It's not happening. And for Republicans,
Geraldo,
too.
He's going to jail. I'll bet the farm on it.
All right. He's going to jail. It ain't happening. I'll be back. So, Noam, before I go to either to Nevada and the brothel or to back to the callers on the debate and reviewing the state of political play here in the nation, what do you hear from your family in Israel about all this trouble in Jerusalem? Are they in the midst of beginning the Third Intifada? Is this this another war between the Palestinians and the Israelis?
It sure looks like it. You had the former president of Israel, Shimon Peres, today trying to bring all these religious leaders together in Jerusalem to say, hey, come on, you know, we got to stop this before it gets out of control. But a lot of people would say it's already at that point. And regular people on the streets, you know, the Israelis are just worried to... Most of these people who've been stabbed have been like waiting for a bus or been hit by a car, driven purposely into a group of people waiting for a bus. And so you have these awful scenes. And it's not just in Jerusalem. It's been playing out in other towns as well.
But not Tel Aviv, not the Herzliya, not the heartland, the coastal heartland.
I don't think I've seen anything in Tel Aviv. But, of course, that's the fear. It starts in Jerusalem, like the other Intifada moments. And you get these random moments in other cities as well. And so... people who are waiting for bus are waiting in groups, and they're eyeballing each other for sure. Definitely that's the case in Jerusalem.
You know, I've covered it since 1972. I fear that that it's going to, like I said, the Holy Land going to hell in a handbasket. But we'll watch it. We obviously are concerned about it. We think we'll probably be going there if things really get out of hand. All right, you heard about it, the ex-NBA star. He won the title with the Lakers in 2009-2010. More recently, he's been famous to the extent that word applies as the spouse to Khloe Kardashian. Lamar Odom, huge strapping NBA player, spending time in the Love Ranch in Crystal, Nevada. The owner of the famed Bunny Ranch, a good pal of ours, Dennis Hoff, joins us now. So, Dennis. Welcome. What happened to Lamar? First of all, how is Lamar Odom right now?
Well, I talked to the bodyguard last night, and the family is going to call me this morning, but they're keeping it pretty close to their chest. You know, the hospital, when they tried to put him in the helicopter, was telling my staff that they didn't think he was going to make it, and if he did, he was going to have some serious problems, and sad that they couldn't fit him in the helicopter.
So they couldn't helicopter him out because he was just too big?
Too big. And so they had the ambulance. So they ambulanced him from the Love Ranch about 20 minutes into Pahrump, Nevada. And then they immediately wanted to get him out, but he couldn't fit in the helicopter. And it's so ironic that the thing that made him famous, his height, and it caused him this problem.
So what was he doing that caused him? Was this a drug overdose? What happened? Too much loving?
We don't think so. You know, he came out on Saturday, wanted to just disappear for a few days. They put him in my home, which is attached to the Love Ranch, to stay there as my guest. And we told him, the staff told him, no drugs. And he said, nope, no problem. I'm okay with that. He did want a bottle of cognac, but he didn't drink that much. After 4 days, there's still a third of the bottle left. But he was partying. He was also sleeping, which tells me he probably wasn't doing coke. That's my guess anyway. And he was doing a lot of herbal Viagra, which is my experience from it like 10 years ago when I tried it once, was it's like an herbal speed. I mean, it just got me so rushed up. But I think he did 8 or 10 of those.
Yeah, but I don't think you can overdose from anything herbal. I don't know for a fact, but I mean, it sounds to me like if indeed he did not use heroin or cocaine, then what could it be? A heart attack?
Well, it could be. I mean, too much of anything.
But he was puking, right? He was puking all this stuff.
When we called 911, they said put him on his left side, which it took multiple people to do that because he's so big. And he started puking up a bunch of stuff, foaming stuff, some blood. And that's when the ambulance hauled him out. But, you know, the police went through his stuff, and there wasn't any talk of any drugs. And if the girls would have known about any drugs, they would have told me, and I would have called him and said, Lamar, stop. You can't do that here.
Well, he did have two suspensions for violating anti-drug policy in the NBA. So, I mean, he was a drug user.
No question about it.
And he came from Jamaica, Queens, a local guy, made good and did great in the NBA, and then hooked up with this whole tabloidy reality family, the Kardashians, and then so what was he? 4 days? How many women in 4 days?
Well, he was partying with two main girls: a girl named Ryder Cherry and a girl named
Ryder Cherry.
Ryder Cherry, and the other girl was Monica Monroe. If you go to the LoveRanch.net site, you can see him. A couple little blondes. They loved him. Everybody, he was a nice guy, having fun. The other thing, he was eating, the kitchen was feeding him all the time, so that's another reason I doubt whether it was cocaine, but you never know. I mean, Heidi Fleiss told me this morning, she says, Dennis, us drug addicts can hide this stuff, you know that.
That's so true, Dennis. You know, my experience, once a junkie, always a junkie.
Yep, and it's sad to say, but what a terrible situation. But what it proves is, like Judith Regan wrote in my book, The Art of the Pimp, we don't talk about anybody. Nobody knew that Lamar was there. People know that I'm friends with the owner of the Lakers, and we have a joint birthday party, but there's never been talk of a Laker ever been to any of my ranches.
You mean an active duty Laker?
Absolutely, and we just don't talk about my business.
How do you charge somebody like that? I mean, how much would that be worth, 4 days with two of your girls?
Well, I let him stay at my house free, and we fed him free, and so what they do is, if they want to party with a girl, then they go and negotiate what they're going to do, how long they're going to do it for, and that varies. I mean, it can be a little bit, it can be a whole lot. I mean, it could be hundreds, it could be thousands, or it could be millions, and we've seen it all.
You've seen it all. Now, how often does something like this happen?
Something like this would happen with Lamar, never. I mean, we've had four people have heart attacks in the room with girls in 23 years, but they always go to the hospital, and the first thing they do is have the limo pick them up and come back to the ranch.
Well, hopefully Lamar will recover. Dennis, thanks. It's always so nice to talk to you.
Thank you, and you won Celebrity Apprentice. We love you.
Oh, Dennis, you still there?
Yep.
What do you think about Playboy going non-nude?
Well, it's the next thing. The Bunny Ranch is going to quit selling sex. Are you kidding me? I mean, why?
They say that the Internet's just a click away. You see any sex act you want.
The quality of the pictures on the Internet is garbage, Geraldo. It's not quality stuff. Playboy is the best photography in the world. We put girls in Penthouse and Hustler every month. Playboy is amazing photography. So you can see junk pictures of girls on the Internet, absolutely. But you're not going to see quality girls, and you're not going to see celebrities.
So you think 89-year-old Hugh Hefner is what, lost it?
I'm going to send him my book and say, you know what, you need to read this and understand we're in the sex business. And it's just like Marilyn Monroe wanting to be a brunette and changing her lipstick color from red.
Okay, Dennis, I got you. Dennis Hoff from the famed Bunny Ranch and the Love Ranch out in Nevada, scene of the collapse, the sad collapse of Lamar Odom, the ex-NBA star. Dennis, thank you very much.
Thank you, Geraldo.
Okay, let's get back to politics. I tell you what, let me take a break here. We'll get back to politics and so much going on. This is a busy, busy day. It's great to be back. I'm back from Puerto Rico, where we celebrated Columbus's discovery, actually Ponce de León's discovery of the island of Puerto Rico. So much to talk about, though. If you want to talk about that, we can. But we'll take your calls. Phones are ringing. We like that. In Forest Hills, Harvey's on the line. Harvey, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind today, brother?
Yeah, I've been listening to you for a while. And, you know, I think you got a political infatuation with Hillary.
With Hillary? Oh, my
exactly.
God. I've never been accused of that.
You're almost on the border of being a sycophant for her.
Oh, my God. You know, why? I think she's being holded. Because I think she's being railroaded with this Benghazi nonsense?
She's being railroaded. Look at all the other stuff that pops up in politics, what they're saying about the Republicans, too. Come on. But I think you're going for the endorsement hat trick for Democrats. Obama, Obama, and now there's Hillary.
Well, I tell you, if Donald Trump is the nominee, and yeah. I love the guy. I really do. I've never been closer to a person who's vying for the largest, the biggest office in the land. But as long as he has those noxious ideas about deporting the 11 million people and their citizen-born children, how can I vote for him to be president?
They might be noxious.
I would be dishonoring my own sentiments, my own idealism, my own feelings about what life is like.
You. But guess what? You talk to a lot of people in the United States. They don't think they're noxious.
Well, those people will vote for Trump. I agree. Those people will vote for Trump.
Also,
others will. Go ahead.
One quick thing before I go.
Go ahead.
What are you saying such nasty things about Webb? Like you said, no one knows him or cares about him. My God, this man's a hero.
Didn't I say that?
You said that. I wrote it down.
I said that. Didn't I say that we honor his service, that he's a wonderful person, a Vietnam veteran.
Nobody cares about him.
He couldn't even get nominated in his own state in Virginia. No one's going to vote for him for be president. Let's grow up.
It's his right to run.
Let's grow up. Of course it's his right to run. You didn't ask about his right to run. Do I think he has a right to run? Of course he has a right to run. And people have a right to not to vote for him. It's going to be Clinton versus Trump. That's my view, and that was a good call, and I appreciate it. In Vernon is Jamie on the line. Hi, Jamie, or Jamie, what is it?
Good morning, Geraldo.
Good morning.
I'm going to ask you, I know everything centers around race with you, so I'm going to ask you a question about...
First, I'm a sycophant for Hillary Clinton. Now everything revolves around race for me. Go ahead. Continue stereotyping me, but go ahead. What else?
Well, I listen to you every day, so...
Well, I appreciate that.
Okay. How can you justify giving $1 to any illegal immigrant when people on Social Security who paid in for 40 years are not getting $1 raise and are going to lower their standard of living because they can't get a raise from Social Security?
I utterly reject the notion that undocumented immigrants have any detrimental impact on people receiving Social Security. Social Security, the system is intact. It has been intact. And people, if they want to raise the payment, I think what you Bernie Sanders had it exactly right. You want to know how to fix Social Security? It's not about undocumented immigrants. That's preposterous. You know how you fix Social Security? You now have a payroll tax. The payroll tax goes up to, I think, $118,000. In other words, if you make $118 million, you still pay the same dollar amount as the person who makes $118,000. It stops at $118,000 a year. You don't pay any payroll tax above that. Why is that? Why is it that the richest people in the land are the ones who get the break on the payroll tax? Bernie Sanders is absolutely right. Everybody should have the courage to do this. You should pay payroll tax on every dollar you make, regardless of how much money it is. Doesn't it make sense that the people who make more should pay more to the Social Security Trust Fund? Why is it that it stops in the upper middle class at $118,000 a year? What about the person who makes $300,000? What about the person who makes $300 million? They should pay payroll tax on every dollar they earn, and Social Security would be solvent for generations to come. That's the way, and that's why Bernie Sanders was right. That's why I started this program saying that, I was an idealist, a wide-eyed idealist, I should say, in the 1960s. And then as I grew, I understood how systems work. And I understood that moderation is the only way to get anything done in this world. It's not the way to get a big audience and talk radio moderation. Nobody wants to hear about someone who's a compromiser, someone who can bring together people from both sides. Isn't that what Hillary Clinton is trying to do? You know, is that what Donald Trump is trying to do? Jeb Bush is trying to do that on the GOP side. How's he doing with that, by the way? Jeb Bush, remember him? Jeb Bush, the brother of a president, the son of a president. And now he can't buy lunch in Florida, where he was governor. He falls behind Trump. I mean, it is absolutely the only way things get done. Social Security can be saved by fairness, Bernie Sanders fairness. That's not a wild-eyed, cockeyed, revolutionary idea. That's a pragmatic idea that speaks to fairness, and if people oppose it, you'll know who opposes it. You'll know that person voted against fairness and Social Security.
Are you all ready?
I have a range of views, but they are rooted in my values and my experience.
We're going to win because first we're going to explain what democratic socialism is. And I think we should look to countries like Denmark, like Sweden.
But we are not Denmark. I love Denmark. We are the United States of America.
Anderson, you're looking at a block of granite when it comes to the issues.
It seems like pretty soft granite, though. I mean, you've been a Republican, you've been an independent.
Did you hear what I
Democrat.
Said?
Secretary Clinton, is Bernie Sanders tough enough on guns?
No. Not at all.
I am not a pacifist. Yes, I happen to believe from the bottom of my heart that war should be the last resort.
But tonight, I want to talk not about my emails, but about what the American people want from the next president
Senator
of the
Sanders.
United States.
That the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails.
Thank you.
Secretary Clinton, do you want to respond?
No.
Do black lives matter or do all lives matter?
We need to combat institutional racism.
Everybody on this stage has changed a position or two. I never took a position on Keystone until I took a position on Keystone.
Why should Latino voters trust you now when you left them at the altar at the moment when reform was very close?
I didn't leave anybody at the altar.
There is such a difference between everything you're hearing here on this stage and what we hear from the Republicans.
Hear, hear. Donald Trump, that carnival barker in the Republican Party.
Would you shut down the NSA surveillance
Absolutely,
program?
Absolutely, of course.
All right, that was a little excerpt from last night's Democratic debate, such as it was. You know, Noam, it was actually quite civil, which was made for a much less interesting television, but I guess a much better political debate.
You know, in past, it's always been sort of civil. You know, you forget pre-Donald Trump, debates weren't as entertaining as they are with Donald Trump. And, you know, even if you look at how many Republicans were in back in 2012, it never got as exciting as it had been this past summer. So I think we've come to expect maybe a little too much.
You need a celebrity to drive an audience, it seems to me. Now, Donald Trump is obviously more than a celebrity. He's a celebrity who has become not only a formidable candidate, but now, in my view at least, the favored candidate to win the nomination of the Republican Party for the presidency of the United States. But he has a flamboyance about him. He has an energy and a charisma about him that is undeniably interesting and makes people tune in. You never know what he is going to say. And I think that that's what drove not just the Fox News debate, where you maybe could understand because of the loyalty of the Fox News audience to the right side of the political spectrum, but an audience almost as big when the Republicans had their encore on CNN. 24, 25 million people, those are NFL kinds of ratings, I would expect. And the ratings, I don't know if you've seen anything yet. I haven't really checked, but I would expect that when the ratings come out this afternoon that CNN will do well, but nothing near what the Republicans did. Whether that is also going to translate in terms of turnout next November. I mean, obviously, it will be interesting to watch that. But there's clearly, it was, 2 hours of that. Imagine if it was 3 hours. The Republicans, remember, the second time around went 3 hours on CNN, and people stayed tuned the whole time. In last night's case, I think that once you were past the novelty of it, 30, 45 minutes in the first hour, it was all over for me. I think that Hillary Clinton, though absolutely dominated, was interesting. And a little snippet in that montage you just saw confirmed it. What was interesting is that gun control became the most mentioned topic. You heard very little about Syria, relatively speaking, very little about China and taking over those islands, very little about Ukraine and Crimea, even the shootdown of the airliner by the Russian separatists, Russian-backed separatists in eastern Ukraine, a year back. What you heard a lot about was gun control. Gun control, Bernie Sanders, that is a vulnerability if you're on the left. If you believe that we need more gun control, if you believe that we need universal background checks, as I do, if you believe that we need a ban on assault weapons, as I do, oversized magazines, as I do, then Bernie Sanders is not your man. I mean, he's a senator. He is the senator, one of the two senators from rural Vermont. He made a point of saying people in rural states feel differently about guns. They obviously do. But the fact he voted against the Brady ban on assault weapons and basically opposed gun control, I think is something that ultimately will hurt him among Democratic voters. I think, as I said, it's a flirtation. It's a lot like the Ron Paul campaign, 2008, that my son Gabriel and a lot of his friends, they backed the congressman from Texas, the Libertarian, only ultimately to lose interest as the race wore on. Or even Ross Perot, 20 years before that. So it's Ross Perot, it's Ron Paul, and now it's Bernie Sanders. I think even though they come left and right, I think the interesting thing is these insurgent outsiders and Ben Carson now, more to the point. I think that they'll be flirting with them, but they ultimately will reject them. But this whole thing about gun control I find fascinating, and I despair that because of the NRA's power that anything will be done in Washington. But what was interesting, Noam, is this Milwaukee, Wisconsin case, this landmark decision that happened day before yesterday, this Milwaukee jury finding against a gun retailer called Badger Guns, responsible for the illegal sale of a gun to a straw purchaser. Now, the videotape showed that, two guys came into this gun store, Badger Gun Store in Milwaukee, or just outside Milwaukee. One who was prohibited from buying a gun was obviously the real buyer. He's telling the guy who's actually putting up the money, what kind of gun? I want this one. No, not that one. Get this one. And so the Badger, like they do, a lot of these gun stores do this. They sold the gun. The gun was used to cripple two Milwaukee cops. They sued the gun store. The gun store said, we're protected under this act that was passed during the Bush administration, this act that insulates gun sellers from liability. The jury said, no, you are responsible. You should have known that this guy who got the gun was not permitted to have the gun under the rules. You knew that. You sold them the gun anyway. The gun was then used to cripple these cops. You are now responsible to the tune of $5 million to the two police officers. So I think that this could be the way we finally get gun control, making these gun sellers responsible for the consequences of their reckless irresponsibility. But it was interesting to watch how Bernie Sanders has a weakness on the left having to do with gun control. Okay, what's up? What's up? What's up? Uda in New York. What's up? What are you thinking about? Thank you very much for calling.
Hi, Geraldo. I love your show, and I'm always getting excited about it. I am so disappointed with Clinton, Mrs. Clinton. She stood in front of those coffins coming back from Benghazi and lied, and I can't forgive that. And furthermore, she's been in politics with her husband for so many years, and she cannot identify a document that is classified? I don't understand it, Geraldo.
Well, I understand exactly the sincerity of your position, Zuda, but may I ask who you do like?
I would love to have Chris Christie. He's bold, he's outspoken, he's aggressive, he speaks what he thinks, and he's almost a little bit like Sanders.
It's interesting that you say Chris Christie. I have not heard his name in quite a while. You know, no, when was the last time we heard Governor Christie?
Well, yeah. He's been languishing in the single digits for a long time. So he just hasn't, he hasn't gotten the power out there to get his name out there. Even the debate he was he was okay, but, you know, he didn't seem to get any juice out of that.
Kind of marginal, Uda.
Yes, I know, but when he speaks in front of the people, he really brings his points home.
Well, you are wonderful. You brought your points home, and I appreciate the call. Very nice call. From New Jersey, we have Vince on the line. What's up, bud?
Yeah, good morning. I'm glad you played that little piece of Bernie Sanders talking about Denmark, because it leads right into this whole Social Security fairness thing. First of all, you said Social Security, why doesn't a person pay $300,000 a year? Why don't they pay all the way? I'm already paying about $90,000 to the federal government, $25,000 to the state of New Jersey, $7,200 I pay for Social Security for the max. Well, now that Social Security would go to $21,000. And then when I have the pleasure of retiring, I'm going to pay more tax on that money after I get it. It's ridiculous to start saying how I have to pay more and more than half
my pay. But I assume, hold it a second. I assume, Vince, that you make more than $118,000 a year.
Yeah, absolutely. Over $300,000.
So why is it that you pay the same absolute amount as the guy who makes much less than you do?
No, I don't pay the same absolute max, because the people that not only pay less than the $7,200 max a year, there were $7,700, I think it is now. They're getting all sorts. When their kids go to college, they get a break on that. They get write-offs in their taxes. They get this. They get that. I get nothing. There is no tax write-off for people that make over about $180,000 a year, I think it is. You get nothing. You get nothing from the state, nothing from the federal government. You add it all up, and that's why people are voting for people like Donald Trump and even Ben Carson. Let me tell you about Ben Carson. But first, let me just say real quick about the Denmark thing. Then I want to answer your question.
Oh, well, do me Denmark, because I'm going to run out of time. Just pick one. Bernie Sanders says we want to be like Denmark, and Hillary says
we don't want to be like Denmark. Let me tell you something. I've been there. I've been to Oslo. I've been to Stockholm. In the last 6 months, I was in Denmark last year. It was actually Oslo. They had a mini snowstorm, like 5 inches, and it took 6.5 hours to get from 10 miles from the airport to the city because they don't have any plows. You get to the city, they had a John Deere tractor about midnight. 10 hours after the storm hit, they had a little John Deere tractor. You go get something to eat, $75 for one person to have a basic dinner. I'm not talking about a fancy dinner. A beer is $17. You go look it up. Anybody, I challenge anybody, go to Oslo.
Oslo's in Norway, Vince. Oslo's in Norway.
That's right. That's what I said, all of them. It's all the same. Oslo, Stockholm, Copenhagen, go to all three of them.
And they're beautiful Baltic cities, and I'm not a socialist.
Great cities, but guess what? Try living there.
I'm not. I don't like. I don't like paying 90% income tax. I agree. The United States is not Denmark, nor is it Norway, nor is it Sweden, Finland, or any of the Baltic states, or anywhere else. It is this unique American experiment. I'm just reading a new book by Simon Winchester, The Men Who United the States. Noam, you got to read it. It's so fascinating to see how they put together the nation that we now have. And you read it, you realize that everybody came from someplace else. You know, it was interesting last night looking at the panel. A couple of things. Trump said a couple of the people up there had no right to even be up there. What the hell were they doing there? I mean, certainly Walter O'Malley. Governor O'Malley. Is that his name, Walter? Is that his name? I don't really have it in front of me. Anyway, O'Malley, I don't think should have been up there. And, you know, Lincoln Chafee, what the heck was he doing up there? He couldn't get elected in Rhode Island, his home state. I also thought that it was interesting that the Democrats are less diverse than the Republicans. Of course, there are many more Republican candidates in the debate than there are Democratic candidates, but they do. I mean, look at the Republicans. They got Latinos. They've got a black man. They have a female. The Democrats had a female, but everybody was all of the Caucasian persuasion. One thing that, you know, we talked about gun control being the most mentioned topic. One thing that barely came up was the whole Planned Parenthood debate. And that is a big issue, this whole thing about the videos that purport to show Planned Parenthood selling fetal body parts in a cavalier way. Planned Parenthood, if you look at the front page of the New York Times today, has announced that they will no longer be taking any money for fetal remains, even money to cover their own costs, now that it has been revealed how utterly insensitively they treated those fetal remains. So Planned Parenthood is not going to be doing that anymore. No more fetal tissue reimbursement, which is a good thing. But the fact that they only mentioned it in passing, Planned Parenthood, I think they could have dealt with it. Oh, it's Martin O'Malley. I'm sorry, Governor O'Malley. Martin O'Malley, not Walter O'Malley. Where the hell did I get that? Anyway, Planned Parenthood, I really do believe that they owe an apology to everybody. Abortion, I believe that a woman has a right to choose. I think Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court decision back in 73, is settled law. Any woman has a constitutional right to make a choice about whether she wants to terminate her pregnancy, have an abortion. But Planned Parenthood, the way they took that right and made it into this, made the fetal remains, as if they were leftover wood chips. It was very, very unfortunate. And I'm glad they're not going to take fetal remain reimbursement for fetal tissue anymore. I hope they still provide fetal tissue to legitimate researchers doing stem cell and all the rest of it. But the fact that the Democrats barely mentioned Planned Parenthood, except to say that, the Republicans want to take a woman's right to choose away. I think they could have done more. They could have said that it is sickening the cavalier way Planned Parenthood treated fetal remains. They've been sufficiently chastised now. Let's move on. Planned Parenthood provides, a very necessary service to women. I heard a joke, I think it was on Saturday Night Live this weekend, something about if men got pregnant, you'd have abortion clinics as common as Starbucks, one on every block and four in every main intersection. But that aside, I think that the Democrats could have done a much better job talking about Planned Parenthood and should have, at the very least said what I just said about how unfortunate it is that they became so hardened to the financial aspects of disposing of the fetal tissue that they allowed themselves to be vulnerable to this macabre video that may or may not be an issue. I think that what it will come down to isn't about Planned Parenthood. It will be a re-argument about the right to choose, and people like me who believe that women should have the right to choose legally and with sensitivity will be forced to vote for that candidate over one who says, women should not have that right, or certainly not have that right past a certain point. I even believe in limitations on late-term abortion. I do. And partial birth, forget about it. I mean, it's absolutely sickening. I really don't have – I'll take your calls. I'll tell you what. Greg, David, Gino, Joel, others, please just be patient with me. Noam will do the news break, and on the other side of it, we'll talk politics. And one thing has not come up I want to talk about, the Democrats' position on marijuana.
I think that we have the opportunity through the states that are pursuing recreational marijuana to find out a lot more than we know today. I do support the use of medical marijuana, and I think even there, we need to do a lot more research so that we know exactly how we're going to help people for whom medical marijuana provides relief. So I think we're just at the beginning, but I agree completely with the idea that we have got to stop imprisoning people who use marijuana. Therefore, we need more states, cities, and the federal government to begin to address this so that we don't have this terrible result that Senator Sanders was talking about, where we have a huge population in our prisons for nonviolent, low-level offenses that are primarily due to marijuana.
That's ridiculous that people are still put in jail for pot. I mean, it doesn't happen much in the enlightened states like this one. But the medical marijuana is far more evolved in other states than it is. I mean, Chris Christie has done everything he can to obstruct it. Here in New York State, it is equally difficult to get a prescription. Not that I have tried, but I would I'd love to have one. But I think that Hillary Clinton has, basically laid out the middle of the road course. Leave it to the states to decide. I mean, on the right, the GOP always preaching states' rights. The thing about marijuana use, I think this has been my experience, that conservatives and liberals have basically the same position. I mean, Anderson Cooper, if you saw last night, Noam, Anderson Cooper, when he, and we have a special guest, I want to bring him in momentarily, but Anderson Cooper said, you know, about marijuana that everybody in this room has tried it, and everyone kind of gave a nervous chuckle, nodding and elbowing each other, because everybody, I bet everybody listening right now, unless your mom's age, has tried marijuana, you know, at more than once over the years, no doubt about it. And so to pontificate about it, or to put people in jail behind it, is just like preposterous. But states, right? Let the states decide.
Yeah, well, look, it's working in Colorado and Washington. So I bet, you know, everybody's watching how much money's being made. It's just a matter of time till other states follow suit.
The one thing we cannot have is if, you know, the GOP candidate, who I think is Donald Trump, wins and the Republicans sweep the Congress and the White House, that conservatives then forget their own personal histories and kind of legislate morality and say people can't smoke dope, you know, if they start cracking down using the federal government again to arrest people from behind pot. I think that would be preposterous. But Derek Peterson, you are the CEO of TerraTech, the public pot company. Tell me a little bit, Derek, about your company.
Thanks for having me on. We have a couple different arms. We actually grow produce and basil back in Chris Christie State in New Jersey, kind of waiting for that environment to open up where we can actually be producing medical cannabis. But you're right, it's a legal state, but he's done a great job of suppressing the growth there. We also make and manufacture extracted forms of cannabis and distribute those throughout the California market. And speaking of Nevada, with Hillary and Bernie, we just won 8 permits throughout Nevada, so we're in the process of building out multiple operations, dispensaries, production, and cultivation in Nevada for the medical market there.
All right, let me ask you a couple of questions. Derek, your company is TerraTech. Now, how do you bank? Do you really, is it all cash? You have to keep it in your pillowcase because banks won't take it, won't insure your deposits?
You know, with all the progress we've seen in the industry over the last few years, and I tell everybody, over the last 12 months, we've seen more progress than the last 12 years. The banking side of the industry is still archaic at best, and that's one of the biggest issues that we suffer, is the managing of the cash and then distributing the cash to employees, to government agencies, to pay our taxes. It's a huge security risk, and it's a gigantic additional cost and a headwind for these businesses from an operational standpoint.
So you're walking around like illegal drug dealers. You got cash, you got to launder your cash or whatever you do. You've got to stay within the law in terms of your finances. You've got to pay people. You got to pay taxes on what you're selling. And all this is like it's like the old days before banks even existed.
It's crazy because they want the industry to be transparent. They want it to come out of the black market and into a more, you know, tax and regulated overt market. And banking is a huge part of that because, you know, taxes are an honor system for so many of these businesses, because banking and the deposits into the bank are a validation point when it comes to an audit.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I think about honor systems when it comes to paying tax? Think of Greece. You know, no honor system. You got to pay your taxes, I think, at the point of people should pay at the point of purchase, and purchasers, I mean, rather the sellers should pay. But anyway, you worried about who wins the White House?
I am, and I'm not. And I say that because, I mean, let's say Chris Christie got into office, for example. I mean, the Pandora's box is so far open. We have great litmus tests around the country. Colorado sales are going to eclipse $100 million a month. Oregon just opened up with $11 million in its first week of sales. To me, if a Republican gets in, for him to come into office and then overturn voters' will is political suicide. And now you're seeing public support over 50%. This is what the constituents are asking for, what the people are asking for. I have a hard time believing that they're going to be able to put a cap on this, even if it is a Republican Congress, you know, coupled with a Republican president.
Derek Peterson is my guest. He's the CEO of a company called TerraTech. TerraTech is the largest public pot company. What does that mean, a public pot company?
Well, we're publicly traded. We actually took the company public back in 2012, traded under the symbol TRTC.
What exchange?
The OTC, QX, the highest tier of the OTC market.
Oh, the OTC, over-the-counter, is that what that stands for still?
That's over-the-counter, that's exactly right.
All right, so let me ask you a couple of questions. Have you, and you have to give me, I know you're an honest man, you got to give me a straight answer. In Colorado and in Washington State, have they seen an increase in driving under the influence?
Not to my understanding. And it was interesting. I just saw a test come out of Europe, and anybody that's listening can Google it. They actually they took two people. One of them they allowed to smoke medical cannabis or cannabis. The other one they got drunk, and they put them on a road course. And interestingly enough, we all know what the result was for those that were drinking and driving, and those that were smoking cannabis and driving really had very limited impairment. So it's going to be interesting to see how that evolves over time. In addition, there's a lot of testing technologies that are being developed right now. So I think that that issue and that concern will work itself out as the technology adapts to the industry over some time.
I'm talking to Derek Peterson, the CEO of Terra Tech, a large marijuana company. What about, I rode an airplane from Denver back to New York with a businesswoman who was a big skier. She and her husband, big skiers. They say that the ski lodges in Colorado are thriving right now behind marijuana. Where would you rather ski, in Utah where you get busted, or in Colorado where you could smoke openly and legally? What about skiing accidents?
Like you said, you know, cannabis is being utilized anywhere, and I wouldn't be somebody that would ski. I wouldn't want the risk of something like that. I've taken enough hits. I grew up in Massachusetts and skied 93 my whole life, and I certainly wouldn't want to take the additional hits from the accidents I've already have unimpaired. So
that's me.
Cannabis has a huge medical use, and of course it has a recreational application, but people need to be conscious of what environment they're utilizing it in.
And so how are those this is my last, I got to move on, although I'm fascinated with it. Like candies and stuff like that, you mentioned the edibles. How's that business?
You know, interesting, the concentrates and the edibles were maybe 10% of the business about 4 years ago. And today I think they're probably breaching about 40%, the combination of those two things. And people are looking for alternative forms of consumption besides smoking. People are concerned about the effects that it may have on the lungs. So,
and what about vaping? What about vaporizing?
A lot of people are vaporizing. That's a significant portion of the market right now, too. I mean, so many states are outlawing people's ability to smoke anything. And that's just kind of a natural adaptation to those legislative changes. So you're seeing a tremendous amount of that as well.
And is it cutting down on the smuggling of marijuana into the country from Mexico?
Well, and that's what we're hearing. So it's put a huge dent in that smuggling, which has kept the dollars here, creating the jobs in our country, which is something Trump should be excited about. However, they've certainly adapted and now converted over to alternative drugs.
So, yeah, different kind of. Yeah, don't feel sorry for the drug smugglers. They got something else going on. Derek, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, Robert.
Very informative. Thank you. As promised, let me squeeze in as many of you as I can right now. 866-Geraldo. Actually, let me just deal with the calls I have right now. And then if you have something on your mind, you give me a call tomorrow. Here's Joel in Monroe. What's up, Joel?
Hi, good morning, Geraldo. I'm a CPA practicing accounting for over 10 years. Naturally, I have a lot of thoughts about our tax system. I even have ideas how to fix it, but it's not for a quick phone call. But I just want to comment on your not understanding why Social Security is capped at $118,000.
Okay, what don't I understand? Other than it's a break for rich people.
Social Security is not meant to be a tax. Let's start right here. It's a broken socialist program where you force people to put into certain retirement funds, which is not operating the way it should. But regardless, the benefit is also capped. So someone who is you're getting paid after retirement based on how much you paid in, but with a certain cap. So if you have a cap...
Oh, I would lift the cap. I would lift the cap. I mean, if you pay more than 118, you get more than the 7,700 now. I would lift the cap. Let the cap be whatever it is that you put in.
But it's not like that. The benefit
It's also capped at 118,000. So wait a second. Okay. This is what I'm saying. You pay up to $118,000. You're getting a maximum from Social Security of $7,700. So why not allow that $7,700 to grow as you pay in grows? I'm okay with that. It's just that the pot gets bigger because people are paying in more than they take out. I want that.
I would personally not do it because I'm upset on the first half, so I don't want to expand Social Security.
I know you don't even like Social Security idea, the idea of it at all, though, right?
But if you want people to take
care of themselves, which is, I think, very naive.
It's not that you need to take care of yourselves. Just as we don't have a program how to how to make sure that we can pay our grocery bills. We don't need the government to take care of our retirement funds.
Well, I just think that,
the private sector does much better than the government.
I agree with that, Joel. Theoretically, I agree with that. There is no way on God's green earth that people, even now, even with Social Security, would be prudent enough to take care of their all people take care of their retirements. You'd have such desperation. So many people that we all know that rely on Social Security, that's all they have, and pitiful, meager savings. How many people have prudently saved for retirement? I'm worried about my own retirement, and I've been making big money. But you have a lot of, dependents, a lot of expenses, and you're going forward. I mean, this is something the government did that, the Roosevelt administration did that was brilliant. It gave people a safety net. And if you didn't have that, I mean, my God, I can't imagine the suffering, the privation. I mean, how many old people would be eating cereal without milk? David in Manhattan. What's up, David?
Hey, yeah, about Bernie Sanders. I think he won the debate, but what bothers me is how the media is giving him special treatment. None of the national media is mentioning that he's Jewish, A, that he's an atheist, B.
I never even thought of that. Yeah, he's Jewish. Yeah, That's interesting.
Yeah, about when Romney ran every day, Mormon, Obama, Muslim, Jeremy Wright's church, but they're like avoiding that. And
that's fascinating. That's a good point. I think that's a good point. Noam, did you know Bernie Sanders was Jewish?
Hold on. Listening to him last night, I could have closed my eyes and I would have thought it was Larry David up there.
Larry David. That's who I'm going to think of every time I look at him now. Larry David from Seinfeld. That's exactly who he is. But go ahead, David. What's your last point? That was it? All right. I just wanted to make that vaguely. It sounded like he was angry that the Jewishness was not more front and center. But, let's not question his motives. Greg, what's up, man, from Pennsylvania?
Hey, Geraldo, I just wanted to give you just a quick update on guns for people that don't live in New York. You've got to get out of New York and talk to some people. You know, we have 380 million people in this country. Most don't live in New York City. People now.
We also have 330 million guns, but go ahead.
Hold it. Okay. People now fear, the way the police are being treated, people feel more responsibility for protecting themselves and their families. I want to give you a quick example.
Hurry.
We live 80 miles outside of New York City, hour and a half bus ride. Most of the people commute into New York City. Almost everybody we know, they did a survey, 90% of the people have multiple guns in the house, Democrats and Republicans.
I have no problem with people having guns.
Well, there's a dozen shooting ranges in our area.
I have no problem with legit people with background checks done who aren't on terrorist no-fly lists, who aren't beating up their wives, who aren't mentally ill. I have no problem with them having guns.
Well guess what? The restaurants in the area put full-page ads in. We welcome, gun owners with a license to carry, come to our restaurants. You know, the ranges are full. People are buying.
Greg, I got to go. But I get it. And I thank you very much. I love you, everybody. Good to be back. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.